Hey there, Larry.
Hey, Jay.
How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. It was kind of a bit of a battle at work.
Let me tell you, it was a literal battle.
Really?
Yeah. What robot happened? Armies, man.
Oh, damn.
You know, we keep not programming with those three laws.
You got to do all three laws.
We were always trying to cut corners, and
and then what happens?
We're the ones who get cut.
That's right.
Let me tell you. But it did start me thinking about warfare.
Really? Warfare?
Warfare.
What battles, about warfare?
Fighting battles. And battles and warfare and how it's depicted in speculative fiction.
Huh. I didn't know that they would do warfare in speculative fictions.
Well, I mean, there's lots of warfare. Well, it depends. It's an interesting thing. Because, you know, I mean, and this is different than just, you know, killing people.
Okay.
Because, I mean, yes, people die during warfare.
That's what I've understood,
but
yes.
But warfare is also about tactics. It's about troop movements. It's about how you depict said things. You know, comic books tend to live in a place where it's mostly one-on-one fighting.
Yeah.
Even things like Secret War or Civil War.
Yeah, yeah. The scenes are generally like, there might be like four people fighting, but it's a small number.
But it's a relatively small number.
Yeah.
So that's, which is a bummer. I mean, there's sometimes you get like war scenes depicted in comic books.
Yeah.
Usually the more fantasy sort of comic books.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously warfare is a huge part of fantasy.
Yeah. Well, there's also the World War II comic book, so or the Nom.
The Nom. Oh, the Nom. I was a big fan of the Nom.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. You read the Nom a lot.
I read a few issues. Like, it was that time.
Yeah.
There was the Nom, and there was China Beach.
Rambo.
You know, Vietnam. Platoon,
yeah.
Which my mother walked out of twice.
Wait, why did she walk back in the second time?
Well, I was, whatever, 13,
yeah,
however old I was when that movie came out.
Yeah.
It should not have been in a rated R film. Well, I was accompanied by an adult.
Yeah.
For most of it. My mother, just to diverge into fully personal stuff, I love my mom very much.
Yeah.
She has a real problem with suspense.
Ah, okay.
She cannot take it at all.
Okay.
She's the kind of person who leaves the room during like a particularly tense episode of Cheers. She will,
all four of them.
Yeah, she like,
will he go with the hand?
Yeah, that's, yeah. She really can't handle it. I'm pretty sure I convinced her to see Platoon.
Yeah,
she was skeptical.
Right.
She made it about 45 minutes into it, and then there was a very tense scene, as there are, because I don't know if you've seen Platoon.
Not in a long time.
It's full of very tense scenes.
Yeah.
Very, very tense scenes.
Yep.
For our readers.
They read this. Yep.
Yeah, for our listeners who also have not seen Platoon, it's a Vietnam War movie starring
Charlie Sheen. Yeah.
That's right. Charlie Sheen, Tom Berenger, and Willem Dafoe.
Right. Directed by
Oliver Stone.
Correct.
Yeah.
You may continue.
Where they are, they're working, they're in a platoon. There are other guys in it as well. But the sort of general layout of the land here is that Charlie Sheen is, you know, your green recruit who's been drafted. Tom Berenger is the sort of war-bitten, craggled, hard-hearted, almost crazy guy.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen's the Matthew Modine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right.
If we're going to cross over into Full Metal Jacket.
Into Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
Yes. He's the Matthew Modine.
Yeah.
Whereas Willem Dafoe is the sort of good-hearted, decent soldier dealing with crazy circumstances, but he's the good guy.
He's the Martin Sheen.
Yes. He's the Martin Sheen.
Apocalypse Now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
no. Martin Sheen's totally bonkers.
He's more the Frederick He's more the Frederick Forrest of
that
Apocalypse Now.
Sense. Yeah.
And so tensions arise.
Yeah.
Terrible things happen. My mom just can't take it. She gets what we call in the family the flaps, where she flaps her hands as though she's hot when something tense happens, and then she runs out. She left the theater.
Right.
Left me alone in the theater.
Yeah.
I think she was aware that I'm leaving my child alone in a dark theater.
Right.
So 5 or 10 minutes later, she came back. And the scene she came back into was, so one of the things that happens in this movie is in the middle of some raid or whatever, the whole thing gets busted up, the guys are all spread out, and Tom Berenger is facing off against Willem Dafoe.
Right.
And we've already established that they're antagonists, and I think at this point Willem Dafoe has threatened Tom Berenger's career or whatever. My mom leans over to me as these two guys approach each other warily. She says, if that guy shoots that guy, I'm leaving. And sure enough, Tom Berenger shoots Willem Dafoe, spoilers, and my mom got up and left and did not return for the rest of the movie. It was too much for her.
See, in my mind, she walks out of the movie once, then she, on a different day, she went like, maybe I'll try it again.
No, she walked out of the same movie twice
in a day.
In one sitting. Yeah. All so, right. Anyway.
To circle back
to that
era. So there was the NAM.
So there was the NAM. And, you know, like, there are a lot of comic books that revolve around, you know, the toll of war. That's a big plot line in Preacher.
Yeah.
Has a number of scenes set in Vietnam.
And The Punisher is...
The Punisher.
You know, pre-now, he was a Vietnam vet.
He was, yeah. He was a Vietnam, the original version of The Punisher. Though I think there was always the part where the mob killed his family.
Yeah, but he had returned back from Vietnam, and it was why he was able to suddenly be proficient in all forms of warfare.
I mean, and there are the large number of veterans, and how, like, the wars that they are veterans of have shifted, you know. Tony Stark was originally captured by communists, etc. So, I mean, but warfare, again, like I said, comic books, it's hard because there's not, there just aren't armies.
Well, yeah, I mean, they mostly focus on they're more likely to focus on the smaller components of a larger battle.
Right.
You know, and generally, like, I mean, I am thinking of Secret Wars, the most recent version of Secret Wars, where, you know, they're trying to take down Doom, and but they're split into various contained components. Of, like, you know, we're not assaulting Doom's castle with, like, 20,000 people.
Yeah.
It's, like, five people here, five people there, and the planet, like, it's, you know, it's always an underdog kind of situation. Even in, I mean, but there was, like, the Civil War comic book, the first one, where there's definitely kind of two sides, but it never felt like... But it always feels like a collision of people.
Right.
Hey, we're in Central Park. Let's fight.
Exactly.
Rather than like, okay, here's
our strategy.
Here's our strategy.
Because there's not that many people. And also the nature of telling stories in comic books doesn't really allow for that because essentially what you just get is a big splash page where there's lots of action happening in all these different places, and then we focus on whatever the key battles are.
Yeah. Well, there's Fables. Did you read Fables, right?
A
good chunk of it. Most of it. I read up until like I think I read like the first 9 trades, and then I was a little disappointed. So in a huff, I sold all of them. I have huffs. Your mom has flaps. I have the huffs. But anyway, but there's like, you know, there was kind of in the storyline of Fables, leading up to the great battle with the great villain of the piece. Who I won't spoil.
Okay.
All right, we'll spoil it. Geppetto.
Right.
Fuck that guy. you know, because he's a jerk, I guess. Anyway, but like you kind of had the sense of them organizing the fight to him. So there was kind of a big battle and a lead up and talk. And actually, one of the reasons I was disappointed in the comic, ultimately, was because they had a plan to take down Geppetto.
Yeah.
And it succeeded in every single way.
Right.
There wasn't ever kind of... people are kind of like, isn't that a good thing? I was like, yeah, but not in a dramatic sense.
It's not good storytelling.
It's not good storytelling. Like that every... Because I never... Because all the pieces worked in conjunction really well. I never felt like, oh, they might not beat Geppetto.
Right.
Like, they're going to beat Geppetto.
Everything unfolds according to plan. And that's... You know, like the A-Team. Everything unfolds according to plan.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, they had built up Geppetto, built up this battle over 9 trade paperbacks.
Yeah.
This is the big bad guy. This is the guy that we fled Fairyland because of this guy.
Right.
Because he had raised such a successful army or whatever.
Right.
That we're fleeing to New York. And that they're like, oh, we brought him down. We won.
And then, yeah.
Like, obviously, I want the heroes to win,
right?
But I want to feel like we might not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's one of the ones I can think of that really kind of had that was a war, a larger war, a war written on a larger page than like actually I see a lot of superhero.
Yeah.
Like even the original Secret Wars.
It's just a bunch of big fights.
It was just a bunch of big fights like, on a planet. Like, who's going to win? Thor versus Black Panther.
I mean, I wish that it was like that. I wish because, you know, I have to do Contest of Champions, and that's what Contest of Champions is.
Yeah.
Just, you know, two guys fight.
Yeah.
I mean, Secret Wars was even worse than that.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't even that interesting, where it's like, you're forced to fight your buddy.
Yeah.
It was just sort of, here are a bunch of villains, here are a bunch of heroes. For reasons that don't really make sense, the villains keep attacking the heroes and...
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah, because of plot.
Because of plot. Right. And so, yeah, I mean, comic books don't... The real great depictions of warfare in spec fiction live in the sci-fi and fantasy worlds.
Yeah.
Like, that's where you get, you know, you get your great battles, you get your...
Your Battle of Endor, your Battle of Yavin.
Yep, your Battle of Wolf 359.
That's a great one. Yeah, that's a really great one.
You get great episodes like Battlestar Galactica 33, ooh, which is...
I wouldn't argue 33 is a warfare episode.
I mean...
If I'm going to go to Battlestar Galactica, uh-huh, it's the one where they're escaping New Caprica.
Okay. All right.
Because I feel like that 33 episode is like a really good... like, terrorist episode.
You think so?
Yeah.
I mean, I like the feel of that, the battle strategy, that, like...
It's a good strategy episode. Because I agree with that.
That's the key, that, like, part of the depiction of warfare is about strategy.
Yeah.
And about strategy on that level, and is, you know, you gotta Ender's Game it of thinking about the army of individual parts, or army as a whole, or whatever it is.
I like that you use Ender's Game as a verb. Just then. Yeah. I thought that was quite lovely. But what's interesting actually about that 33 episode, besides it's your mom would just have the flaps.
Oh my
all
god!
The way through,
yeah, no, because yeah,
it is
can't
filled from, with tension from beginning to end. But what's interesting is that the only strategy really that's being employed is by the Cylons,
right?
And the humans are just responding.
Yeah, or just trying to figure it out.
It's such a great episode.
Yeah. Like, if you haven't seen it, go watch it.
It's so good.
And also, if you haven't seen it, just so you know what we're talking about, the premise of it is the Battlestar can, like, leap to a different place. And every time it does, every 33 minutes later, a bunch of Cylons catch up to it.
And
they can't figure out how, because they're leaping randomly,
how
they keep finding them every 33 minutes.
And they can't jump right away. There's a certain amount of time.
Yeah, they've got to basically wait 33 minutes before they can jump.
No. Now, I think it's like 10 minutes or something. Yeah. But like every 33 minutes they jump, they jump and then 33 minutes later
they're attacked.
So maybe it's they can't jump for.
Yeah, but whatever it is, and it's also the toll of, like...
We're, like, the worst nerds today. like, whatever it is, it's great.
But, yeah, it's just the constant toll of the constant attacks. And, like, I think even when the episode begins, they've been doing it for hours.
Or even days at that
point. Yeah, they're unable to, like, sleep or rest or do anything because every 33 minutes they're under attack and have to jump.
Yeah. But there's an episode a little bit later on in seasons where, like, they're escaping from Caprica, and I think that's such a great...
Yeah.
You know, like, because they're the underdogs again, and how they're using the resources that they have.
Right.
They're using it in surprising ways. Like,
right.
When the Galactica pops in the atmosphere, and it's like, coming down. Like, that was such a great moment, because it's an unexpected, and it's tactical, and it's smart. If we're talking tactics, there's the... Battlestar episode where they're trying to attack that ore facility.
Right. Oh, that's a good one.
And we have a lot of talking of planning.
Yeah.
You know, and the tensions behind who should plan, who should be on the mission, you know, what should we do, who can we, you know, can we trust Baltar to come up with the right idea of where to attack, you know?
The answer is always no.
But he was right. He was right. You know, in some ways, that was kind of the most Ocean's 11 episode, where like, haha, we're actually doing this, guys. Why wasn't I told? Need to know bases only.
Right.
That was my James Earl Jones. Not James Earl Jones.
Eddie Jimmy Olmos.
Yes. No, need to know bases. That's my imitation.
I am. I mean, Battlestar is probably one of the best, because Star Trek is sort of like TV outside of the battle at Wolf 359.
Yeah.
And I know no one else but me has any warm feelings towards Voyager, but Voyager's Year in Hell episode.
Which didn't they just erase?
And then they erased it.
Yeah.
Because there's not, I mean, it's Star Trek, so there's not a lot of...
Well, that's what Voyager means in Spanish, to reset the button.
It's not what it means.
All right. Shut up. Some language it means.
Shut up. It's like Doctor means warrior across the galaxies.
That's our retcon episode. We should retcon the episode and go back and talk that. Well, but like Deep Space Nine
Deep Space, like, because they have the Dominion War.
Yeah. And so rather than doing it, you know, like in an episode, like, well, 359 was a two-parter with the Borg.
Right.
Go watch it. It's great.
It's great.
You know, this Dominion War lasted a long time, TV-wise. Like, it was a couple seasons.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, and so they had... What was interesting is they would have big battle scenes in some episodes. Like, we have a big mission.
Yeah.
Or they would have, like, there's a great one, Siege of AR, with Bill Mumy as an engineer, where they're behind enemy lines and they're trying to hold the fort. You know, and why it's important to stay and not just leave. And, and like, shifting allies.
Right.
You know, and so it's like, and actually, in some ways, I feel like that's when Deep Space Nine, I think it's the biggest difference from the other Star Trek shows. It's definitely darker.
Yeah.
In its tone. I mean, it's not dark like Game of Thrones dark or Battlestar Galactica dark, but for Star Trek, it's a fairly dark show.
It's really
dark
for Star Trek.
But, like, dealing with shifting alliances and the decisions that you might make. Like, there's one of the great stories is about how they're trying to get the Romulans on board.
Yeah.
You know, the Klingons and the Federation and Romulans, like, to fight the Dominion. And, like, there's one person who is, like, they needed to get on board with this one Romulan ambassador, and ultimately, like, he didn't. The evidence had been faked of something. He was like, "No, this is a fake." There's a great internet meme of fake, and then they end up with a little help from Sisko, but Garak blows up the guy's shuttle.
Wow!
Like, kills the guy, so, like, he can't tell everyone that
it was fake.
It was fake, so to keep the Romulans on board.
Wow,
you know?
That's
so
dark.
It's pretty dark. It's a great in the pale moonlight.
All right.
Oh, it's great. And
I'm slowly working my way back through it.
Oh
so.
Man, I think. Oh God, what's his name? The guy that played Sisko.
Avery Brooks.
Avery Brooks, I think, is the finest of all the captains. Like, as an actor.
Oh, he is so good.
He is a fantastic actor.
He is really, really good.
Yeah,
and he's given more to do. I mean,
he's given a lot more to
do. Is he a better actor than Patrick Stewart? Like, pound for pound? I mean, obviously he's a better actor than
pound
Shatner.
For pound. I think he's taller than
pound
Patrick
for pound,
Stewart.
Is he a better actor? Probably, I don't know. But by the point when they started Deep Space Nine, there's obviously the conscious decision to make that part more complicated.
Yeah. As Sisko famously said, I'm not Picard.
He does.
As he was punching Q.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe he's not the best.
But I know,
in the context of the show,
he's a very, very, very good actor.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
he's one of my favorite. Yeah, I don't think he's talked about often enough.
No.
I don't think Deep Space Nine kind of gets its fair share.
Even though it's like every Trek fan I know loves that one the most.
Oh, it's.
And many people love it more than the original series. I'm just saying.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying that I'm one of those people.
You can
withhold your disdain.
If I had to choose between, like, you know, original and Deep Space Nine, are the ones that I would come back to over and over and over. But I do think, kind of getting back to the subject, I do think it's the warfare storyline because is one of the best. Is when it starts shining, because I think it kind of asks the question: what is a utopia like when it is under attack?
Right.
Which I don't think any other series has that opportunity to deal with. And I think, well, here's the thing. Here's funny. Like, when did the war with Cardassia happen in the Federation? Does it totally feel like it happened off camera?
It absolutely happened off camera.
Because it's like...
It absolutely, entirely... When I was watching Next Generation again, it's literally like, oh yeah, we had this war with Cardassia.
Yeah, and I'm like, wait, did this happen between
totally,
like, season two and season... Like, suddenly out of nowhere.
Totally off... And but the other thing is that apparently it had been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
And literally no one ever mentioned it until it was like, oh yeah, we had this war and we just settled it.
Yeah.
And I think it's introduced in the context of a guy who is still mad at the Cardassians. And that's the first mention that it ever existed.
Yeah, and it felt like it had happened recently.
Yeah.
And, like, it was very...
And was bloody and, like, vicious, and it was a pitched battle.
Okay.
And
so I'm not the only one. You're
not the only one.
Did I delete an entire season of Star Trek somewhere in my brain?
Season 5 of Star Trek, all of a sudden,
we've been at war.
We were at war, but now it's over.
Yeah.
Like, which is, again, a problem with Next Generation, because it's like, we were at war, but now it's over.
Yeah. It's a little 1984-ish. Yeah. Like, we were always at war with Eurasia.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
But not just to stick with Star Trek. I mean, Star Wars...
Well, has the big battles.
Has big battles, but again, I mean, that's one of the things I'm excited about with Rogue One, when that comes out, is getting a different perspective on the way the war was conducted, right. And different perspective on different kinds of battles.
Well, I think that, but I think, I mean, like, obviously Star Wars, we're dealing with war, like, it's mm-hmm. a constant state of war, like, right. You know, the original trilogy, and even the prequel trilogy, like, those are, and to a lesser degree, Force Awakens, the first two trilogies, the universe is, or the galaxy is in a state of war.
Yes,
like that's what it is. Like, you know that,
and has been for some time.
It has been for some time. You know, we're dealing. You know, in Star Wars, we have the big battle with Hoth, and there's a great strategy. There's a great strategy scene. There's not a great strategy. It's like, okay, shoot this hole. We're just gonna fly really fast down this canyon and shoot a hole.
And shoot our proton.
Yeah.
Proton lasers. Proton torpedoes. Do they say torpedoes?
Yeah, it's a proton torpedoes.
They say proton torpedoes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Better than the photon.
Thieving.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Bastards.
Thieving bastards.
Empire, there's not a big war scene. It's kind of like a lull.
I mean, there's the big... Well, you said Hoth, but you meant the Battle of Yavin.
Well, there's the Battle of Yavin, but there is the Battle of Hoth.
And then there's
Hoth.
The Battle of Hoth, you know.
But I don't... But I wonder... But, like, I feel like... Of the three major battles of the three movies, I feel like Hoth is more like... Because it's when the rebellion is really on the low end of where they are. So it's kind of like... It's not to me, like, Hoth, I bet you, is more like a skirmish in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah,
where Battle of Endor is like a big battle.
That is a big two prong battle.
Yeah, you know, but I feel like, because I'm kind of also thinking about like World War II movies. Like, there's not a lot of,
I mean,
like the battles in Star Wars feel like a great conclusion, but it's often like. You don't necessarily get a sense of how the battle is working from a macro sense.
Right.
We're following Luke and his X-Wing.
Yeah.
We're Nine Numb in his X-Wing because he was an alcoholic for 20 years.
He was not. He was retired, and he came back, and they gave him his own ship.
Like his own little tiny ship. Anyway. That's a callback to episode one of Deep Cut. But I feel like the battles in the prequel trilogy are like they're larger scale.
They are much larger scale.
You know, like an Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, that is.
We have a clone army.
That is a clone army
clashing with the robot army. With the robot army, I mean, it's all digital.
Yep, but that is definitely on a much larger scale. But we don't get. Again, this is why I'm excited for like a within the war kind of feel.
Yeah,
because Luke, you know, just sort of shows up one day, and then is the hero.
Yeah.
And then he is actually not very important in the Battle of Endor.
That's true, because he's wasting time with family issues.
He's working on his family issues and having probably the worst job interview in history. Because that is essentially what it is. It's a job interview.
Yeah, yeah, an unexpected job interview.
An unexpected job interview.
I do not like your resume, young Skywalker. Is there a reference that I should contact?
Tell me about a time when you were challenged in your work. And how you overcame that challenge.
And what do you expect the pay to be? What is your rate, Skywalker?
Where do you
Skywalker?
See yourself in 5 years? Controlling the universe? Or standing next to the guy controlling the universe? There are no wrong answers.
Well, there are some wrong answers. but it does kind of beg the question, actually. In this particular battle of Endor, if Luke hadn't been distracting the Emperor...
Right. You do wonder...
Would things have changed? And I don't think they would have.
I don't think they would have. I think it's a Raiders of the Lost Ark situation where Luke could have been flying an X-Wing, and the battle probably would have turned out where Luke probably could have just stood home.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like...
Or he could have...
And then probably in the end, both...
He probably should have just stayed on Endor, because you know what? You know who could have used a fucking lightsaber?
That's true.
Han Solo and Leia could have used a lightsaber.
They could have cut that thing open.
It turned out, it all worked out fine in the end.
Yeah.
But it would have been a lot quicker.
Because somebody had daddy issues.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't think, like, it's not like the Emperor was like, okay, Commander, move 30 degrees to your left and shoot that guy. Like, they were... The commanders were handling it on their own.
Yeah, we don't even meet any, like... After Vader started choking them all out in Hoth, We stopped meeting the generals.
Well, no, because isn't it Admiral Piet who like takes over, and he's in Return of Jedi.
Oh yeah, but only like vaguely. We don't get.
Well, it's not like we really need to get to know them because they might get checked out.
Admiral Piet.
Admiral Piet, you are now in charge. Admiral.
Is Admiral Piet the one who's also in Lost Crusade and is also Pycelle?
No. That's not Admiral Piet.
That's another one.
That's a different guy. That's
a different.
That's
guy.
That's a commander from, or something. But it's the same actor. Yeah,
it's the same
guy,
actor.
The guy driving the AT-AT is
okay,
or the AT-AT, however you want to call it. AT-AT.
But you know,
but did you never watch the Clone Wars cartoon?
No,
did you?
No, I did not.
I would if you really like. Speaking of dark, like that that show went some dark places. Like I haven't watched the Rebels, but like Clone Wars,
that
I
would some dark places.
Yeah, I would really, really recommend. Like if you want to, because it's kind of taking place in between Episode 2 and Episode 3,
right?
And it's really dealing with warfare, and you get to know a lot of the clone soldiers. They become regular characters.
Okay.
There's this one episode. Like speaking of tactics, there's a bunch of, Federation. Who are the good guys?
In the Galactic Senate?
The Galactic
Republic.
The Republic. Republic senators. Republic soldiers are in the space ship.
Yeah.
And they are attacked by robots, droids, who start drilling holes in their ship.
Right.
And they all get blown into space.
Yeah.
And like, this is on the Cartoon Network. This is for kids. So they kind of really do in the Clone Wars TV show go into tactics and how like the Jedi work together with the clone army and stuff like that. It's kind of given more. They have more space and they're not. So they're kind of telling a longer term story there. So you get a better sense of how the war is fought. And again, like talking about how they work on getting allies and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Because it's not just droids versus the Republic. Like, there's other people outside of the Republic who want to participate. But yeah. Oh, maybe at this point, take a break for a sponsor.
Yes.
If you're going to go to war, you need a boomstick. Boomsticks. They kill lots of people. That's... Living and undead. Boomstick.
Boomstick. Oh, that was a good army.
Tale of the King, baby.
So I mean that is the thing. Like, it's a good point about World War II movies, and you know, you got to think also in terms of World War II movies. World War II movies made during World War II, which are largely sort of propaganda war as background,
right.
Versus World War II movies made after,
Like in the 60s, 70s,
60, and the evolution from going from Here to Eternity to Saving Private Ryan. Right. That sort of scale of fighting.
I think Saving Private Ryan gives you a good scale of what it's like to be on the ground during a battle. But I don't, so the experience of being a soldier within warfare, especially in the opening sequence, which is probably the most memorable, really.
Because
the rest of it's them walking around.
They walk.
They walk a lot.
It's we spend more money to go rescue Matt Damon.
Yeah, someone should do a crossover between Lord of the Rings and Saving Private Ryan. Like, they walk by, the hobbits walk by.
Exactly.
Hey. But like, well, I don't want to move too far away from speculative fiction, but I think like Band of Brothers kind of does warfare quite. Excellently.
Yeah.
But yes.
I was going to say, we should also talk about literature as well.
Well, Ender's Game, you've mentioned it as a verb.
Which is one of my favorite depictions of warfare and of space warfare. I mean, there's also, I think we've talked about it here a couple times, The Forever War by Haldeman.
Yeah.
And both its depiction of like the tactics of fighting battles at relativistic speeds and distances, as well as the toll it takes on soldiers going off to fight the war and then coming back to planets that have rapidly, radically changed in their absence.
Yeah, I can't recommend Forever War enough. I think it's one of the best just books ever. But then there's also Starship Troopers, both the book and the movie.
Right.
The movie is hysterically wonderful. I will defend that movie forever.
It's amazing.
Because the book itself, I'm not a huge fan of the book.
It's Heinlein. It's hard to be a big fan of Heinlein.
But I like The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, but it's a juvenile Heinlein, so it's a little, it's aimed at a different audience than who I might act like a juvenile. But, and I might like a good poop joke. But, you know. But I think the great takeaway from the book, like the most common exciting thing, is the power suits. That everyone really likes those as a future augmentation for soldiers.
Right.
Like that's a very common.
They also use
trope
it in the Forever War.
Yeah, they use it in Forever War, and there's a lot of different science fiction. I mean, hell, that's basically Iron Man, really. Yep. You know, so I think it's a very common trope that Heinlein kind of created this idea of a power suit to do, which they dropped from the movie, which everyone freaked out about. But the movie is genius when you realize it's kind of when everyone else doesn't realize they're being satirized, but Doogie Howser probably knows I'm doing satire.
Doogie's pretty aware that this is doing.
We're
the bad guys here.
Yeah.
Got it.
I don't think anyone else realized it, but
here's something that we have not talked about that I keep forgetting are books that I've read and really enjoyed. A friend of mine turned me onto them years and years ago. The Vukosian Saga.
I've always wanted to read those. Convince me to read
them.
They
are super fun.
Yeah.
Oh my god, so much fun, so smart and funny, and again, very much, if you're not aware of the Vukosian Saga, it revolves around the Vukosian family, and particularly Miles Vukosian, and it's set in the future, but it's also very sort of off-world. It's like, in another solar system, there are human colonies, and it's long past, like, the days of Earth, and they've got... One of the things that's great is that they've really built the, like, mythologies and histories of all of these planets.
Yeah.
And filled them out really nicely. But there is a lot of space battling. And what's fun about those books is that different than... The Forever War or Starship Troopers, a lot of it is very sort of fun, and it's almost like pirates. It's more like, it's honestly
more swashbuckling,
like naval, more like Master and Commander.
Okay.
More like a naval battle than sort of space battle-y.
Right.
But there's a lot of space battle tactics. There's a lot of like, we've got to hide behind this moon, and we're going to send these guys around, and it's just super fun.
Well, it's kind of like, well, that reminds me of like my favorite battle. It's not war, but my favorite space battle is Star Trek II: Wrath of Khan.
Oh yeah,
because what I love about that battle, and you said it, is like it's a naval battle,
right?
And they're using tactics. They're talking about like he's thinking two dimensionally. All right, let's go up.
We can go up. We can go down.
You know, and so like, and it's this very slow.
Yeah.
You know, your mom would have the flaps during the scene.
Oh,
you know, where they're in the Mutara Nebula, and they're just moving around.
And it's like they're in the fog.
Yeah.
And you have to just wait for a glimpse and fire.
And like, what's great, like you get a sense of mass.
Yeah.
That the ships can't. That's like one of my complaints about Star Trek Nemesis is like they're recreating this thing. But the ships are zipping around.
Yeah.
Like there's no mass.
You've got
to
have that feel of like the mass and the weight of the ships as they move. And
yeah.
Star Trek II: Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great.
Just freaking flawless.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
We heart you, Wrath of Khan.
Yep.
But fantasy always has a lot of.
Oh battles. Man.
You know, we have Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
We have. You know, Lion Witch in the Wardrobe, obviously Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire.
We just watched, well, we can say on the TV show is Game of Thrones.
Right.
And we did just have the Battle of the Bastards, which...
That's quite a battle.
It's quite a battle. It is a very well-built... One of the things that I've liked about something the show has done, the books, since they can go into more detail, less so, is that they don't spend, like, the battles clearly have tactics and plans and all of these things, but they don't spend a lot of time explaining it in advance.
Yeah.
They're just like, it's just understood.
You're gonna see it.
That we're gonna see it, and when you see things happen, that's like, this is a battle tactic.
Yeah.
When, you know, the Bolton forces...
Encircle,
John Stark's forces, and they do that like neat.
Jon Snow. He's not a Stark.
He's not a Stark, period.
Yeah.
I'm saying that definitively, and we'd better find that out soon.
No, he would be a Stark. He'd be half Stark if your theory is correct.
Well, he is half Stark, but his name would not be Stark.
That's true. It'd be Mr. Targaryen.
Exactly.
I'm Jon Targaryen.
Prince,
I drive a car.
Prince Targaryen.
Oh, that's true.
That's right. Possibly king, though I'm unclear on how the lineages work.
Well, I would assume he would be the rightful heir. He would be higher up on the
tower
than Danny.
I don't know how he's higher up than Danny.
Well, because it wasn't... Because Matt
Danny's
King,
his aunt.
Right, but I think it would be... because I know Martin does a lot of history. Yeah. So,
Aerys, the Mad King.
Right. But I'm trying to think back to British history that there was a situation where there was the king, he had his eldest son, and that son had a son, and then the king had two sons, the older and the younger.
Right.
The older one had a son. Right. The older one passed away.
And the son.
And then, so the grandson actually was the heir to the throne, not the uncle.
Oh.
Because that's how the succession went that way. And there's a little bit of a little warfare around that issue.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, which one?
It's not War of the Roses, but like
I think it's
an event prior to it. I think it's Henry the Fourth. Not Henry the Fourth. I think it might be Henry the Second.
It was Henry the Second.
And then his eldest son had a child, but the eldest son died before Henry did.
Right.
And then
Edward, the Black Prince of Wales, is in there somewhere.
I think that's exactly who it was. Edward died before he could become king. So his son was supposed to become king, but his uncle didn't like that idea.
Henry III.
He thought, I should be king.
Right.
So there was a little bit of kerfuffle.
There was a kerfuffle.
Right. So that's why I would imagine in Westeros that John technically would be the heir before Danny.
Got it.
Now, if they got married, problem solved.
Which, you know what? They can.
Luke and Leia.
They're cousins, and they've never seen each other.
That's true.
So
it would be okay?
I think it's okay.
It'd be icky.
They didn't grow up together. They don't know each other. They're strangers.
Anyway, but I want to ask you. So there's kind of like three major battles that I can, like, off the top of my head that I think about. The TV show.
Right.
There was the Blackwater.
The Battle of the Blackwater.
There was, obviously, Battle of the Bastards.
Yep.
And then there's Hardhome.
And Hardhome is, yes.
I mean, Hardhome is a different kind of battle than the first two.
Right.
But it's a battle of, retreat.
It is. Hardhome is a great battle sequence on the show. I don't put it in the same place as that. And there are other, like, when you're, like, in the books, there are other...
Yeah, there's other major...
Other major battles, because Rob wins, like, three battles against the Lannisters. One of which is when he captures Jaime.
Yeah.
I feel like there's another really great battle in the books that I'm forgetting about.
Well, there's the one that Tyrion was involved in.
That's the Battle of the Blackwater.
Right.
And there's also there's the other one. He's involved in two.
Because he has the barbarians
With the barbarians.
But he gets like knocked out unconscious for most of it or whatever.
Where was that battle? It's not at River Run.
Mm-mm. Is it? Maybe it is.
No, because they don't take River Run.
Oh, that's right. Because the Freys take.
Because the Lannisters win that battle.
Yeah.
Who the hell are they fighting? Because I don't think they beat Rob. Oh, wait, no, you know what? That is the battle that Rob wins because it's a feint.
Oh, okay.
He sends part of his army to fight Tywin and Tyrion.
Yeah.
And then the other, like, he sends just enough to draw them in, and then he sends the main force against Jaime.
Right. There you go.
And, yep.
But I think I'm kind of mostly thinking of the TV show. Like, what's great about that Hardhome battle, it's like... It's similar to like Hoth. Like we're under assault.
Yeah.
We just need to slow people down to get out.
We just have to get out of here.
You know, but like it's an example where we see the ice zombies. They're using tactics.
Yes,
even though they're mindless, they're like, you know, well, the fact that they were like piling themselves up in order to climb over the wall.
Thing.
I'm like, that's really smart.
That was really smart.
That's a genius.
Because they're dead that way.
You know, but it's definitely a battle of. Well, then I guess there's also when the Black Fort is attacked.
Another great battle. Battle of Castle Black.
Yeah. Castle Black, not Fort Black.
Fort Black. Castle Black. Get it right. Just get it right.
Fort Black is where Johnny Cash used to hang out.
But, I mean, the thing that I like about, and I think we were talking about this off mic, the thing that I like about both the Game of Thrones battles, as well as the film version of the Lord of the Rings battles, and much of the Lord of the Rings, is that they manage to give you the feeling of, one, being in a battle, and two, that anyone could die at any time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's not until it's over that you realize that no one important died at all.
Yeah, yeah. We might... There's a risk to it.
Yeah.
We feel a palpable risk to it. But, I mean, I think at least Game of Thrones, and I think they're going to get less and less inclined to do it, at the beginning we're inclined to kill off
right.
people. I think Martin obviously set the train in motion.
Though he rarely kills people off in battles. Like, it's rare, it's very rare in the books that anyone...
Of note. Yeah.
Like, there are some minor characters who are killed off in various battles, but it's very rare that someone is killed in battle.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Which, of course, might, because he's dealing with the tropes of
right.
fantasy.
But, yeah, undercutting them. But so, yeah, generally, people are, like, murdered at weddings. Lots of murdering at weddings.
Yeah, why would anyone accept an invitation to a wedding? Hey, everybody, I'm getting married. No.
Nope.
No.
So, sorry. Sending my regrets.
Yeah. but it is, I like, the Lord of the Rings battles feel big and epic.
Yeah, they
like,
are
it feel, it,
really epic.
And they feel, especially in Return of the King,
Yes.
And, like, it does feel like there's some tactics. Let's go get the ghost army.
Yep. Yeah, they're great tactics, and, and there are, again, obvious sort of troop movements, and there's all of that. All of which, and I'm going to rant for a second here. All
right.
About a thing that everyone hates anyway, but I just need to add my voice to the chorus. The Battle of the Five Armies in the third Hobbit movie...
I don't know which this third Hobbit movie is.
...is a travesty.
Yeah.
It is just terrible.
Yeah.
It's sort of interesting. Again, whatever. Peter Jackson can make that kind of spectacle work. But the biggest problem with it is he unnecessarily undoes very smart things Tolkien did.
Yeah.
In particular, so the if I don't know how much you remember of the Battle of the Five Armies.
I read the book and I've seen the first movie.
So, the whole point is that there are five armies fighting on the field.
Yeah.
And Thorin and his, 11 dwarves are hiding out in the mines and they don't want to come out. And they're watching the battle, and the battle starts to turn. And in the book, once Thorin is like, oh shit, I'm being a dick, I need to go help my guys, they bring down the entire front of the mine, and it kills, half of the orcs.
Yeah.
Like, it is a major thing. In the movie, he does that, but it doesn't actually kill anyone.
Mm.
And then he and his 11 dwarves... come out, and suddenly the battle has turned. And I'm like, that's some bullshit.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous, guys. The whole point is they dropped half the mountain on the orc army.
Yeah. And that would be amazing.
Which would have been amazing. Like, I don't understand why you would change that for this stupidity of somehow...
Yeah, making Thorin more...
Thorin is like a superhero. And also, it's true of all of the Lord of the Rings movies.
Mm-hmm.
It is more true of all three of the Hobbit movies, the orc armorers suck.
You get what you pay for.
Apparently they paid nothing for fucking tissue paper.
Yeah.
Because hobbits are knocking those guys out with rocks.
Yeah.
Every arrow goes through plate armor, like in the...
I suspect that the orc armorers are the same ones providing stormtrooper outfits.
Oh my god.
For Endor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, guys. Yeah. Come on.
They're pandas.
Look, they're pandas.
You kill pandas.
They're pandas with sticks and rocks, guys.
Come on.
Yeah. And yeah. Like, at the very least, in the Lord of the Rings movies, they make a point of showing that when the arrows, when the humans or the elves kill the orcs, they're going in at, weak spots. They always find the weak spots, but they're clearly going in at, joints and things. And in this, no. In this, it's just straight humans, through. Shooting arrows through plate armor, and I'm like, that's some bullshit armor.
Yeah. I kind of realized the trilogy was bullshit in the first episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, nope.
The second one's okay. The third one is entirely a goddamn travesty.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have one other thought of speculative fiction and warfare.
Mm.
What about Japan versus Godzilla?
Ooh. Well, that's always a one-sided battle.
It is. Yes, that's
very
true.
Much so.
That's true. And there's not a lot of tactics except, shooting tanks.
Shooting lots of missiles that never seem to do anything.
Yeah. It's more of a reactionary war.
Yeah.
But Godzilla keeps coming back.
He does. And then sometimes he protects them.
And sometimes he protects
from
them.
From
Mothra or Robot Godzilla.
Mecha Godzilla.
Or the aliens.
Yep.
But it is interesting, let's bring out the military. It's like every time.
Yeah.
You gotta figure out a different... Build a Godzilla bomb,
right?
You know,
Yeah, true.
But I was just thinking, like, oh, that's another battle sequence.
That's another good battle sequence.
Giant monsters.
And another good speculative fiction battle sequence that is thoroughly and wholly, not ruined, but they whiffed on that movie.
Uh-huh.
World War Z.
Oh.
Which, that book is amazing.
It's somewhere on my shelf.
It's so good. And it's depiction of the warfare. There's like one, in particular, there's a Battle of New York that is told mostly from the point of view of the soldiers. And like, because if you don't know the conceit of the book, it's an oral history of the zombie world war. And so the descriptions of what that war was like are really, it's really well done.
Yeah.
And there's lots of great stuff in that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I was just thinking on it because partly the Japan thing, one of my favorite parts of that book, because, it covers the whole war and then covers the aftermath. And they're, like, after it, they're trying to, like, rebuild the world. And some of the power dynamics of the world have shifted, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the mysteries is what happened in North Korea.
Mm.
Because everyone in North Korea vanished.
Mm.
And the belief is that they went into underground bunkers.
Uh-huh.
But there's no way to communicate with them there. And so no one is aware, no one knows whether or not they survived, or
they're still down there
if
hiding.
There's not, or they survived and they're still down there hiding because they don't know that it's safe to come out. Or what's worse is that there's like 10 million North Korean zombies in the underground bunker, and someday they will find a way to come back to the surface.
That's great.
And it's just there's a one South Korean guy goes every day to the DMZ. And sits there and just waits all day for some sign of life from North Korea.
I hope he takes sandwiches.
I think
that'd be a long day.
Yeah,
I'm gonna say one of my favorite battle scenes.
Yeah,
Flash Gordon.
Oh yeah,
because you got that music.
The music's going. Brian Blessed.
Dive! You know, it's like I could watch that sequence over and over.
That's a great sequence.
I mean, it's true. It's more of like a small rebel force.
But it's still fun.
But it's still, God. Good gracious me.
Yeah.
I love that movie. All right, any final thoughts on warfare?
War is hell.
Yeah, I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Yeah. Even in fantasy worlds, war is always hell.
Yeah, that's true. Well, except in Starship Troopers. It's a noble and valiant thing. In the book.
Super fun.
It's super great. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks again to Heidi, who's going to make us sound great.
Yep.
If you have any questions, you can tweet us at DeepCutNerdPod on the Twitter.
Enjoy yourselves.
Bye.